Hi, we're Wednesdays with Andrew from Arlington, Virginia.
You know. That was 8-Ball. It was off of the Impossibles album, Anthology. For everyone who's been listening to Wednesdays with Andrew throughout the years, and I know I haven't been as frequent with these as it should be. You know, obviously, old age and fatherdom has really been slowing me down. But for those who've been following along, you know I love the Impossibles. Anthology is, you know, easily top three favorite albums of all time. So I'm super excited to let you guys know that today we're going to be speaking with co-founder Rory Phillips. Now, Rory helped start the band Impossibles. He also was a founding member of The Stereo. He did another project called Slow Reader with Gabe from The Impossibles. He produces music. I found out recently he builds guitars, which is crazy. But we'll be getting into all of that shortly. Before we get to the interview, I do want to play a song from Australian band Flangipanis. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but that's what it looks like they're called. Flangipanis. Australia just does not quit spitting out awesome punk and garage rock bands, and these guys are as good as they get. The song is Good Little Taxpayer. It's off their album Fucking Woo.
Yeah. to me. I still feel your touch in my dream. Forgive me my weakness, but I don't know why. Without you, it's hard to survive. 'Cause every time we touch, I get this feeling. And every time we kiss, I swear.
Yeah, that was Electric Callboy. It's my four-year-old daughter Tua's favorite band, and she made the request. There's going to be a lot of Electric Callboy moving forward on these podcasts. That was a cover of another German group, Cascada. They were a group, I think, from like the early to mid-noughts, maybe. Obviously, like dancey kind of Euro electronica kind of shit. That was Electric Callboy's cover of one of their hit songs. Tua calls it the Castle Song. You got to check out the music video. You'll understand why. But let's give Rory a call. Let's see if he's around. All right. Well, hey, we got Rory from Austin, Texas. Rory, thanks so much for joining today.
Woohoo. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So I was saying at the top of my show, Anthology by the Impossibles, hands down, top three albums of all time for me. Just absolutely yeah. Love it. I don't know what the Spotify royalties look like, but I'm hoping I'm getting you like 20, 30 bucks a month. Just for
Yeah, I don't think the cumulative royalties from Spotify are 20 or 30 bucks a month, but I appreciate that. And that's incredible. I mean, you know, we are a band that not everybody knows. And so to be anywhere near the top of your album list is humbling and yeah, just, you know, thank you. I thank you for listening.
No, thank you so much for joining my little rinky dink podcast. You know, super, super excited to have you here. And I was hoping my buddy.
I know what it's like to run a rinky dink podcast. I feel for you.
Yeah. You guys did a podcast right when you released 13 a couple years back. Isn't that right?
Yeah, so one of the bands, the band that I'm currently active with, The Stereo, we released an album called 13, and leading up to that, that process really took some time. I think the first time me and Jamie exchanged song demos and started talking about bringing The Stereo back was like 2015 or something like that. So it just, it was a real slow burn, you know, bringing it all together. And because we had the time, I kind of like, you know, got the songs written that I was going to do for the album, and then, you know, got that stuff to Jamie Wolford, who is the other singer in The Stereo, and he also produced that album. I got those to him, and then he really kind of went off and had a lot of work to do. And so to keep myself busy, I sort of just had this idea. I had become an avid podcast listener, and so when I really love something, I invariably want to try to do it myself. And that led to me creating a podcast that is about The Stereo. So it's about the formation of the band. And then I'll just, you know, say minor spoiler alert, I got kicked out of that band. So that's actually why I think it's kind of interesting. You know, if it was just all us just talking about our own history, it would maybe get a little more boring. But the fact that me and Jamie had not talked about him kicking me out of the band until we were on mic, like we really saved it up until that conversation. And so there was, you know, catharsis that came out of that. And then there was also the podcast, which I'm super proud of. I don't think I'll ever do that again because it was a lot of work. It was a narrative podcast. So, you know, it was not just turning on some mics and talking about movies with my friends. It was actually trying to cut together something that, you know, is more like an audio documentary. And yeah, I'm super happy with the way it came out. It's called Kings of No Hope, The Story of The Stereo. Love how it came out. Probably not more podcast creation in my future that I know of.
So all that catharsis and all that kind of like reconciliation, that was coming out in real time while you were recording the podcast?
Yeah. Like, you know, we did the thing that I think a lot of people do where it's like when you reconcile, you maybe just kind of let bygones be bygones and kind of just like, okay, the past is the past. We're friends again now. And so let's do it. And what had happened is we played the 15th anniversary show for Fueled by Ramen. So Fueled by Ramen was the label that we were on out of Gainesville, Florida. FBR went on to do huge things after we're no longer on the label. But they, you know, very graciously asked us to come back and open up this show that Paramore headlined and Fun played as well. So it was this huge New York City show. And so that's when we sort of like reconciled, you know, like we brought together the original lineup to do a reunion show. So everything was cool, but we didn't talk about it. Like, you know, when you reconcile things with someone, you don't necessarily deep dive into why you stopped talking to that person, you know, maybe out of fear that it's going to sour things again. But we did finally get to have that conversation, and it was fascinating. I learned, you know, you sort of write your own history in your head of how something went down, and then to hear a totally different perspective of it, and then for him to remember things that I just straight up don't even recall, but I know happened because I got this exact same story from Jamie and Jeremy Tapero, who was the drummer for the band at the time. So it's like, I know this thing happened. I don't really have a memory of it. And apparently it was a bigger factor in this sort of big decision made by the band to no longer have me be a part of it that I definitely remember. So it was a really great learning experience from that. And I just, you know, I hope people listening to it can kind of see like the arc and what it's like to come back and sort of reassess the relationships and the things you did to each other in your 20s when you've got some more perspective on it and maybe you've learned some lessons.
That's really funny. I was actually hanging out with the lead singer of a band I was in maybe 20 years ago. And he kicked me out of bed. He replaced, I'm a drummer. He replaced me with a drum machine. And we were, and I think there was maybe a year or two, we weren't really talking that much, but like very quickly got over it. Like we both had different projects going on too, like musically. So it wasn't like, it wasn't as big of a deal, I think, but you know, it was frosty for a couple of years and we've kind of gone back to, you know, we've been hanging out for the past 17, 18 years since that happened. And what's interesting is we were chatting last night about how we never actually had like a sit down heart to heart about like, like what happened, you know, like we'd mention it, like we didn't ignore it. But we just never like sat down.
Right.
We never kind of like had what exactly what you were describing. Like, I want to hear it from your perspective without me kind of like coloring that and like actually seriously tackle that instead of just, you know, in passing at a bar or something.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I admittedly, I haven't listened to the podcast, but I'm putting that on my to-do list now because that sounds absolutely fascinating. And for everyone listening, I will link to it in the accompanying blog post so you don't have to search for it. So what's it like? Me and you, I think you have a few more years on me, but I think we're kind of in the same age group, same generation. I'm turning 40 this year, so you might have a few years on me, but what's it like kind of, you know, putting together, like staging this kind of comeback, or, you know, if you don't want to use that strong of a term, like reunion kind of effort?
No. I mean, I think comeback is maybe appropriate, or like attempted comeback even. But I'm 47 and it is a completely different calculation at this point, right? I get asked pretty often if we're going to play shows, and the desire to play shows is 1,000% there. I love playing with the other three members of the Stereo. Like they're my brothers. Like at this point we have such a great time. We just put out a 45-minute concert or live performance film on YouTube called Kiss Me Quick. And part of Kiss Me Quick has like the sort of in between stuff. And you get a sense of just, I mean, it's just such a good time to be with those folks. So, I'll jump at any chance to do it, but the logistics of something like that are just so vastly different. We've got only two members, two out of four live in the same city. They both live in Phoenix, Arizona. And then Chris, the bass player, lives in Pittsburgh, and I live in Austin, Texas. And so it's like the starting, you know, the overhead of just getting us all in the same place at the same time and then practicing and then being able to play, it can be kind of like cost prohibitive, which is like really unfortunate. And we're not out obviously to make a big bank off of getting on some show, but we also don't want to lose money. Right. And I think that's where it just kind of gets tough. But yeah, everybody, you know, everybody has full-time jobs, everybody has families. And so it's just coordinating all of that is a lot different. I have a feeling like if we all lived in the same city, we probably would have more opportunity to do things like matinee shows or something that like happened during hours that we're normally actually awake. But until the planets align like that, we'll, you know, mostly be looking for festivals and things like that, that can afford to, pay for, you know, the travel and everything that it takes to get us together. We played Fest a few years ago, in Gainesville. That was, fantastic. We've did a fest in Chicago, 350 Fest. And yeah, so just hoping for more of those sort of opportunities to come along.
Yeah, no, totally. And it's funny, you mentioned the thing about like, yeah, we're not trying to become millionaires. We just don't want to take like a huge bath on this. I don't think people realize like how expensive it is to like get, you know, four people from like different corners of the country together and, you know, like miss opportunity costs, right? From like taking time off work or, you know, doing other things like that.
Right.
Kind of the impact on like scheduling with, you know, when you've got families, all these other commitments. It's a lot harder, I think, in your like late 30s and 40s than when you're like 18, 20, you know.
Like. Oh, I mean, infinitely, right? And that's why you get to go out and hit the road hard and, you know, get your music out there when you're that age. It's like if we hadn't done that when we had that capability, then I don't think anyone would really care about us doing it now. Or, you know, it's like, so we're fortunate that we ever had that opportunity. Some people never get it. But, you know, Jamie and I definitely were just like road dogging back in the late 90s, early 2000s. With whatever band we could get out there with.
So of all the projects that you've done, and you've done quite a lot, obviously a lot of it under the Fueled by Ramen label, a lot of it just kind of on your own. Is there any kind of like, I guess, like highlight or kind of like this was the best, like this is where I peaked?
So tell me, Rory, where did you peak? When did the downfall and the decline start? It's funny that you say that, because I just recently have had the same conversation with a couple of people about a record that I did called Slow Reader, and that was just a one album thing that me and Gabe Haskell from The Impossibles did after The Impossibles broke up the second time. And that's, you know, that's my favorite record that I've put out. That's the only one that where like the production doesn't drive me crazy, because the Impossibles records sound like trash to me. The reason I got into music production is really because those Impossibles records sounded so bad to me, except for the last EP. Brian McTernan did the last EP, and that Impossibles record sounds great. The rest of them, and you know, I'm being hyperbolic, but it just never sounded the way it did in my head. Especially Return. Like Return is the one that like really broke my heart and made me like go buy an ADAT and a console and decide like, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this. I'm going to do this myself so that no one else can mess up another record that I do. But the Slow Reader record, yeah, is really the like front to back best record that I've been a part of, and it was just me and Gabe. You know, Gabe sings the whole album, and I wrote some of the songs and I produced the whole thing. That's I think probably the like hidden treasure out there. If you're into any music that I've done, check out Slow Reader, because I see the number counts from Apple Music and Spotify, and I know it's the one that people listen to the least.
And when you guys did Slow Reader, that was completely independent, right? That like did you release that through a label or no?
Yeah, no, that came out on Fueled by Ramen. I mean, that's part of the reason why it's still on Apple Music and Spotify today. Yeah, it's because, you know, FBR had it and then Warner Brothers bought their catalog.
Interesting. Okay. So, yeah. I always assumed it was just you and Gabe kind of like out there doing it yourselves. Just because,
I mean, yeah, 5 years later it probably would have been, you know.
Yeah. I will second that, and this is obviously unbiased coming from someone not in the band. The Slow Reader record is a banger. It is so good. Still,
thanks.
It's funny though, because like in thought, you were talking about the like just the quality of the anthology record in Return, and just like not being happy with the production. But like, I don't know. This is a punk podcast. I'm like, I love punk rock, and to me, like, Anthology was perfect. Like, it just sounded so good and so raw. I loved it.
Well, good. Well, great. And I don't hate Anthology. I think Anthology sounds like it should, kind of. I think the thing that was really frustrating about Return is it came out at a time. It came out after the Stereo 300, which was the first record that the Stereo put out. And the Stereo 300 sounds, in my opinion, fantastic, especially for the budget. Like, if you know, the fact that we were able to track that record and then have the budget and the year
we recorded it, because it was a lot harder to come out with a good sounding record, you know, 20 years ago than it is today.
Yeah, I mean, it was the page was turning over into what was coming, which was, you know, basically Fall Out Boy and just like like actual professional sounding records coming out of Fueled by Ramen, and that was what I wanted. You know, I wanted the as good as the Stereo record sounded, I wanted that Impossibles record to sound just as good. And it to me sounds, you know, worse than the one we did before that. And, you know, maybe just from overshooting and maybe trying to get to something that we just didn't actually have the means to do at the time, or you know, I don't know what, but either way, that was where it really just turned for me. And then I got a Digi 001, which is the consumer version Pro Tools setup that you could get at the time, and just started recording and getting into production stuff so that I wouldn't be in that place again. And then that's what I recorded the Slurita record with, and I was a lot happier with that one.
So this is what we're going to do. We're going to do a Wednesdays with Andrew GoFundMe page to re-record Return.
We wouldn't even necessarily have to do that. Okay, I have thought about re-recording Return. You know, that's become a thing now where bands will go back and redo their records. And for other reasons, sometimes it's about royalties stuff. But I've thought about it. It's not outside the realm of possibility, but also the master tapes exist out there. Bob Hoag, who's a great producer in his own right out in Phoenix, Arizona, told me a couple of years back that he still has them. So it's like there's also the possibility that we could try to fix it. I don't know if it's fixable, to be 100% honest. It was, I think some of the flaws in the production go down to like the tracking of it, but either way, yeah, it's one of those like ideas I entertain every once in a while and then realize that I'd like have no spare time to do anything that I want to do already. So how am I gonna do that?
That's funny. It's Wednesday night dream. You wake up Thursday, you're like, oh, life. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about, and like I didn't know this about you until I stalked you on Instagram to coerce you into doing this interview with me. You build guitars?
Yeah. So I make guitars. They are parts casters. So I make electric guitars. What a parts caster is Fender electric guitars. The neck and the body are separate and they're bolted together. I have zero desire to learn how to make necks. Like, I don't want to really make necks. And also, I love Fender guitars. And so I kind of get to split the difference. So I out of a piece of lumber, I will make the body, right? Like, I will cut out the body and route it and shape it and paint it and do all that sort of stuff. And then I'll put a Fender neck onto it. And then that makes a parts caster. And the whole point of that is that I can make things that Fender doesn't actually make. So like right now I have a fastback green and orange striped Mustang. It's something that Fender never would have done. It's going to have mini humbucker wide range pickups in it as well. So it's just, the whole idea is, you know, if I worked in the Fender custom shop, what would I want to be making? And that's sort of become my hobby. And it's really the main thing that draws me to it is my day job is sitting in front of a computer. Making music at this point also involves sitting in front of a computer. So I found something that got me out from in front of the computer. And instead I'm out in my workshop. I'm doing woodworking stuff. I'm doing painting and stuff to finish off these electric guitars. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of offset bodies. So a lot of Jazzmasters and Mustangs and what they call a Jagstang done right, which is a variation on the Kurt Cobain signature guitar. I've made four of those at this point. So yeah, I have a reverb shop. There's nothing that I have actually kind of handcrafted in there right now, but there's stuff coming to it. So yeah, you mentioned my Instagram, it's RoryATX. And if you're interested at all, you can find more info there.
Love that. And so would you say the majority of your clients are like fucking Slash or just kind of the everyday?
No, I've sold a handful at this point and it's been to kind of a variety. What's been interesting is like, you know, selling to somebody who has no idea who I am and it's sort of like, okay, cool. You know, I try to price my guitars reasonably and just to sort of like get my money and get paid for my money back and on parts and then get paid for some of the time that I put into it. But, yeah, it's, I don't know. The only bad experience I've had so far is someone tried to buy a guitar from me and then tried to return it before it even got to them. And that was like a real blues lawyer ponytail type guy. And I was kind of okay, this is the dark side of selling guitars on the internet.
Yeah. Assholes always make their way in.
But what I'm actually doing right now is bothering Barry from the band Joyce Manor to let me build his dream jazz master, because I worked on some of the last few Joyce Manor records. I helped Barry out with some of the songs, and he just recently got a jazz master that he likes, and that's one of my next big goals. If I can get Barry a guitar that he'll really love, then.
Dude,
I'll accomplish something.
That's awesome. I love Joyce Manor. I had no idea you... So did you help produce some of their stuff?
Yeah. The way that it worked is Barry reached out. He originally was looking to see if I could produce a record for them, which between you and me, I don't think would have ever happened. I don't think that their management team would have allowed sort of a no-name like me to take on production of a band like that. But... either way, he reached out and I was like, well, I can't, but you know, we could sort of do like a tape trade thing and you could send me some stuff and I could send you back some stuff. And he sent me a demo for a song called Silly Games, and it was just him and a guitar. And I, took that and, edited it a little bit and added some additional instrumentation and then sent it back to him, and he was really into it. And so that kind of kicked it off. If you hear that song Silly Games on, I think it's on $1 Million to Kill Me, that's the first song that me and Barry collaborated on.
Awesome. No, we'll throw it on as part of the episode.
Cool.
Hey Rory, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time. This was so cool. Again, as like a super, super fan of the Impossibles, I mean, for me, this is just very humbling and honoring to be able to chat with you. But all of the projects we've discussed today, especially the Guitar Bacon, has been awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. So I'm really, you know, appreciate you reaching out in the first place. It warms my heart to know that anybody out there still loves the band. And yeah, just happy to hear from you. Thanks for having me.
Now, because we are a radio show, you do have to pick a song to play.
a song to play.
What do you want to listen to right now? It's let's see, it's a Saturday at like 3 p.m. or something. Like what are you feeling? What are you vibing?
Well, so for me, I sort of like broke up with music in 2008 when I stopped being able to do it full time. Like a jilted lover, I kind of stopped listening to music, and so I started listening to podcasts, which is how I ended up making one of those. Now I've gotten back into music kind of like slowly but surely, but all I listen to is 1930s and 40s country. So everything I'm listening to right now is, Hank Williams or Bob Wills is a huge, if you would play even a part of Roly Poly by Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, I would be very impressed. And what you'll note is that Bob Wills is the original hype man. Because Bob Wills does not actually sing. So he's just like the band leader. He gets the band together and, you know, they have a singer. But what Bob does the whole time is he has this little Mickey Mouse voice and he calls in people. So he'll be like, come on in, Tommy. Like, that'll be, and then someone will come in and do a solo. It's like, oh boy. It's pretty phenomenal. And like that now is my main music vibe.
Holy shit. Well, the man has spoken. I will make it happen.
Awesome. Love it.
Look out there, little rolling pole. They're coming your way. Yes, Ellie. Tell us more about it.
It's okay.
Right.
He can eat an apple pie and never even bat an eye. He likes everything from soup to hay. Roly poly, oh, daddy's a little fatty. Betty's gonna be
lots of strength to run and play. Pulls up weeds and he does the chores and he runs both ways through all the stores. He works up an appetite that way. Oh, roly-poly, daddy's a little fatty. Bet he's gonna be a man someday.
That was Silly Games by Joyce Manor. That was the song that Rory helped them on. It was off their album Million Dollars to Kill Me. And next up, I think I'm actually going to play a song from the Stereo's last release, 13. It came out a couple years ago. I'm going to throw on Kings of No Hope, which is also the title of the accompanying podcast that kind of goes along with that and kind of details, you know, the rise and fall and Phoenix rising from the ashes story of the Stereo. I'll link to the podcast over at the blog post on WednesdaysWithAndrew.com. I know how hard it is to Google things, so you're welcome. Here it is, Kings of No Hope, the Stereo.
No hope, coming.
Well, this was fun. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Huge shout-out to Rory for taking time out of his busy schedule to chat with us. That was just really fun, and for me, a very humbling experience. Again, just being such a big fan of the Impossibles and the Stereo. It was really, really cool to be able to chat with him. So, thank you, Rory. I'm going to close out today's episode with a track from the first EP from French band Uncommon Men from Mars. This song is great. It's called Getting Back. Thanks, everyone. I'll be in touch soon. WednesdaysWithAndrew.com. Follow us on Facebook. Bye.
Back at it, baby.